welcome along. It's amazing to have so many people here so early in the morning. This is like a breakfast meeting, really, which is something I don't do. My name's John Kennedy. I'm from London. I work in radio. I work for a station called Radio X. I do a show called Exposure, which will be 25 years old next year in February. You can come around my house. We have a party. And I also do a show, a podcast called Tape Notes, where we interview artists about how they create music. And how they work with producers. So I'm just here really as the facilitator for a panel of amazing international experts. So we've got people from all over the world who are involved in the music industry in various different ways. And so we thought it'd be interesting to bring them together to see what those different perspectives are like and what that can reveal about the lay of the land right now. And I like it within the program, it says three perspectives on where we are as an industry after the pandemic and into a world of fire. No, it's quite ominous sounding, and I think maybe we'll get you all to introduce yourself. So, Paco, you're from Mexico. What's your role within the industry? I think you might need to switch
Thanks,
it on.
Thanks, John. Yeah. I think it's on. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. First of all, I'm really happy to be here. My name is Paco Barba. I'm from Mexico City, and I do I work within the industry, arts and culture. I'm a music programmer for two main festivals in Mexico, one of them being Hypnosis, which is genre, rock genre-oriented psychedelic music. We're a 20,000 capacity festival, outdoor festival. And we are, for the first time, we're gonna be presenting and producing the first Pitchfork Music Festival in Mexico City, which is gonna happen in March. We're announcing the lineup next week, and so that's going to be reunites around 10,000 people. It's going to be the same format as in Europe, which is multi-format, like just like this format, and it happens throughout the city. At the same time, we also have two venues. Both have two rooms. They go from 600 capacity all the way to 3,500 capacity. So we do around 350 shows per year, so between all the festivals. So that means all the brands that we tend to have continuity on the stuff that we do. So presenting throughout the entire year with Hypnosis, for example, instead of just doing one day or 2 days or a weekend of a festival, we tend to do an entire year of presenting and continuing engaging with the community. So we do all presenting. We call it Hypnosis Presents, and we bring artists from all over the world. And this is one of the missions that we're actually applying these days, and this is the reason we're here. At the same time, we also have a label, and we have a platform, and also we have a media outlet, which is called Indie Rocks Magazine. And it's been for 15 years one of the pillars of emerging artists from all over the world, especially Latin America, and is really well known for putting some of the new names, some of the emerging names out there. And I'm gonna pass so everyone can introduce, but I'm just gonna lay out a few things that I'm gonna be focusing on, and I would like to share my perspective with you guys, which is basically, and we'll get into it after you guys introduce yourself, but basically, you know, some of the challenges that we have still being, you know, the financial aspect of what happened after COVID clearly set a pad of what the festivals and the music industry is now. But we also have a very old challenge, which is woman representation in festivals and music industry. And there's been a challenge that is, I think it probably got worse. And also at the same time, we have policy and politics within music industry. So those are the three ways that I'm gonna be laying out so we can get back to it as soon as everybody introduces themselves. Thank you so much again for having me, Matias, thanks very much. I'm really happy to be here, and I saw great music last night. I'm really looking forward to seeing more music tonight.
So Robin, you're from Canada. Yes. So. Quite a bit north of Mexico.
A little bit. I was there a couple weeks ago, though. It's the most traveled to place from where I live in Winnipeg.
Sun-hungry Canadians. Yeah.
Yeah, I was saying that those are the only direct flights are Mexico and hot vacation spots from Winnipeg. So, But yes, I'm from Winnipeg. I technically work out of Toronto, but I do it from home. I run Women in Music Canada, which is a chapter of the Global Initiative Women in Music, which is based out of the U.S., but has chapters all over the world. And so I've been in this role just over about a year and a half. And prior to that, I ran a conference festival similar to this in Western Canada called Breakout West Festival and Conference, who some of the delegates here have been to, and was very much a talent development conference as well, with a large international component, but very much also Canadian developing industry, similar to what I do with Women in Canada, or Women in Music. So Women in Music Canada is an initiative, a company based on moving forward equity in all areas of the music industry and artistry. We do a lot of communication, advocacy, and support for our members. We do research looking at where the lay of the land is now and where we need to get to. And we also do training programs from early entrepreneur level up to leadership level. We do an award program during International Women's Week and a summit. And most of these things have been started in the last year, because my position itself was a result of our government saying we need to move this forward. We recognize that things have actually gone backwards in equity through COVID for various reasons, and we need to commit to moving this forward and supporting women and gender diverse folks across our industry. So that's me.
Sounds great. And Frederick is hometown boy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'm not born here, but I think I can call me Göteborgare by now, 20 years. I moved here 20 years ago, started working artist management. So that's my background. And since 10 years, I run my own artist management and business management, where we help artists with their careers and their business. And not only artists, we also help other record labels and other industry people with their businesses. And then I run a record label also based here in town, Welfare Sounds and Records. Been doing that for 8 years with a couple of other friends in the music industry in town. I dabble in a few different things.
And specific genres? Or
yeah, it's alternative music, guitar-based music, rock and roll, hardcore, punk, indie, pop also. It's a little bit eclectic, but so not very niche. But it started out of a studio, so we saw a lot of bands coming in and out of the studio we were doing, and we figured out we could help them release the music also. So it comes out of touring bands and bands recording instruments in the studio, pretty much.
Yeah. So I was at Viva Sounds last year, and a lot of the conversations in a lot of these meetings were about how are we recovering after the pandemic and how are we getting on after COVID. So it's a year on, and in many ways it feels, if you go out to a show, that it's back. Everybody's back in the room. They're not wearing masks really. I mean, obviously some people do for various different reasons, but it feels like it's back in action. And yet, the strange thing about the music industry is, as somebody who's on kind of the edge of it being in media, that certain areas are always in crisis. They're always like, oh, God, it's terrible. But at the same time, other areas are doing incredibly well. So when you see the kind of amount of money that Taylor Swift has made on her Eras tour, you know, and people say, oh, the music industry is in crisis, you know, think, well, somebody's making an awful lot of money from this. So there's billions of dollars within this industry. And yet, you know, here we are, we're all quite kind of independent-minded people, really supportive of independent music and new and emerging artists, which is vital. But for them to get through that to maybe the Taylor Swift level is a whole other level. Now, from your perspectives, where are we? You know, is it healthy?
Sure. Interesting topic. I mean, it's been an interesting topic since we got back, right? I noticed, from my perspective, I'm a live music talent buyer and a promoter. So obviously, the business got into trouble. It got financially hurt when then the pandemic happened, because we didn't do anything else. You know, like I saw other arenas in which, like publishing, for example, synchronization, start like continue working and being successful. Some of the DSPs working within publishing and working with synchronization in different territories, they exploded. And it was a successful business within the boundaries of COVID. But live music got butchered pretty much. We weren't able to do anything. We tried it all. We tried virtual shows. We tried merchandising. We even opened a restaurant. And we have two restaurants now, and also we have a brewery, a craft beer, Mexican craft beer, just because we had to try something else, and the live music was non-existent at the time, so we needed to keep the staff on payroll and not the staff, the team, the entire team, so we decided to leave the entire team on payroll, and we need to do something else. But moving forward to nowadays, I saw a big shift that has been affecting what is now the ecosystem of live music. Right after the pandemic, I noticed everybody wanted to go out and play. Everybody. So we had a 2022, a very successful 2022. It was out of this world. I was like, oh my God, this is, I mean, we did 360 shows. We sold almost 100,000 tickets. We sold out almost every single show we did. It was just because everybody was so eager to go out and to go to a show, right? And the artists as well, they were so eager to travel and to tour. So they didn't look into the financials. And they didn't look into what was coming after that. And the bubble that we were creating as consumers, as promoters, as record labels, we were creating this bubble in which is about to explode. And I say that because from the financial perspective, now every single particle, every single part of what it means to tour for an artist, it just skyrocketed. So I've been seeing this year now, like for example, 2023, it was probably the hardest year that we've had because everybody realized, oops, we're already tour. We're owing ourselves money. So now we cannot tour again, or either we're just gonna go into a studio and we're gonna tour in 2024, 2025. So what happened now in 2023, I don't know if you noticed, but in North America, A lot of festivals canceled. Some of them didn't actually even announce their lineups because they couldn't actually get. And I'm talking about mid-level established festivals. You know, anywhere from 6,000 to 30,000 capacity. Some of them, like for example, Desert Days in California, which has been around for over 10 years, and they couldn't actually secure a headliner because the prices were just massively expensive. And nobody was touring. A, because of the financial aspect of what it means to tour in 2023, and B, because everybody kept buying talent in 2024. So all these big markets and all these big festivals bought it all. And then medium-sized festivals like our festival, like everybody else, we shrunk. Like we went from 20,000 capacity, we went to 12,000. But we still did it. We wanted to continue engaging with the community and created the festival. And that's some of the challenges that we encounter within just the financial aspect of things. Then there's the other problem that now, in 2024, we're gonna inject money into that bubble. So now 2024, we just secure a headliner for Hypnosis. Everyone is even way more ahead. So everyone is injecting money to the market. But at the same time, we're gonna see in 2025 if we're actually everybody who's investing money is gonna be able to recoup the money. And I'm not talking about promoters. I'm talking about the actual artist. Because by the time an artist gets bought right now, and they're gonna tour in November, December 2024, the prices are gonna be way different. And I'm talking about gas, I'm talking about every single aspect of touring all the tour budget is going to change. So that's probably going to affect us. And we're working with a, with an ecosystem that is not so much financially sustainable in a sense that, and I'm not saying, and this is a topic that I've encountered before, which is policies within the music industry, right? That's obviously never going to happen because it's a different model. But what we can do, and as a solution, there are many many ways that we've been actually taking action onto this. This is one of them. Dialogue is one of them. And just to close down, I think is the perspective of all is very unique in a sense that we have a lot of opportunity, but at the same time, the ecosystem of the industry is going towards a cycle of a financial monetary situation in which it's getting more and more expensive. It's not sustainable. So every single time we invest more money and we have less revenue. And that's also happening with the artists. So if you go to a different level of artists, they got more revenue and the promoters are getting more revenue. And we're talking about, you know, anywhere from 50 to 60,000 capacity festivals, or like Taylor Swift that in Mexico, I think it was the second, in the history of Mexico, the second artist that has sold tickets. She sold, I think 300,000 tickets. And she stopped. She wanted to stop. She could have sold more. So that effect doesn't really apply to our day-to-day promoting situation. It just doesn't. It's not sustainable the way it is. So, and I'm just gonna pass on the microphone. But that's probably something that we should talk about. Is the quality and the quality that is within the policies in music.
Yeah, Robin, as you work for a government-funded organization in Canada, how does the government want to support the music industry and how and why? Because some governments have a hands-off approach. And it's like, oh no, it's an industry, you sort it out. And clearly the Canadian government is being proactive and trying to be very supportive.
Yeah, so it is true. We're very lucky in Canada with the provincial and federal government funding we get. It is primarily for not-for-profits. During COVID, we saw an influx of money in different ways. There were new programs that were eligible also to for-profit companies as a way of the government saying we want to make sure that at the end of this whole pandemic that these companies still exist, that these venues still exist. So there was some new funding brought into that. There was also funding for not-for-profits. Like I was at the time with Breakout West, we had funding that we could hang on to even if our event did go online or alter. So, I mean, they were very upfront in terms of we want to see you through the pandemic. But then it also created a bit of a weird time where the pandemic for a lot of companies wasn't the hardest time. The year after was, because suddenly this funding dried up and tickets weren't selling yet. So a lot of larger venues, a lot of for-profit companies were saying, okay, well, we made it through pandemic, we, you know, cut staff or whatever they needed to do to get through that, but now you're operating in full, you're not getting the funding anymore, and your venues are full at 50%, right? So, because people weren't buying the tickets anymore, and then to your point with things like Taylor Swift and Pink and all those tickets where you can't get a seat for under $300 or $350, people are having to determine, like, what are my favorite artists? What am I going to commit dollars to instead of I'm going to go to these five shows this year, I'm going to go to this one. And so I think it's a bit of a we'll see over the next year how it comes, but those bigger level artists, some of them are going to do really well and some of them are going to have to hold off and not tour in the same year that other artists in the same demographic are touring because the money's been spent. Or they're selling their tickets a year and a half in advance just to make sure that they can pay for their sound and get the show there because, I mean, the reality is those tickets are going up because all of their costs are going up and they're trying to make sure that their bottom line that they go home with is still the same. And they're still trying to make up for money lost during pandemic. So, or commitments made. And, you know, I hopefully think that prices of things like gas and rentals and sound and et cetera will level out at some point, but it's not as feasible for the lower level artists. And then it's like, okay, as promoters, is it our opportunity to then say, okay, well, we have acts who don't cost $300, $400, $500 to go to a ticket or to get a ticket. So let's take advantage of that and share with these audiences that you can come and see independent artists. You can see developing artists for a reasonable price. And maybe that's a door open. And we'll see how that goes over the next year or so. But I think that, you know, ticket sales have come up a bit more. The patterns are different. We're seeing, like, more last-minute decisions to go to shows, which, you know, if they come is great, but it's certainly stressful on the venues and the promoters. You know, other things within my Women in Music Canada world that I'm seeing is more women, gender diverse folks, and people who had various commitments during COVID come up, have either left the industry or, you know, it's almost impossible in most markets in Canada to find female and gender diverse sound technicians because they've either moved over to film, which didn't shut down for very long, or they've had to leave the industry and go into other careers. And so it's like, how do we now bring that back? We've gone, like I said earlier, backwards in terms of equity in especially some areas. How do we bring that back? How do we take this industry that essentially broke in March of 2020 and build it back the way we want it to be as opposed to just the way it used to be? How do we, push through this opportunity of going, well, things have to change. Let's make them change the way we want to see it change. And so that's a lot of what we do in terms of training. But, you know, I run an entrepreneur accelerator program that just finished its fourth year. When I started with the company, it was going into year three. We went from having 50 applicants for that program to having 150, and last year we had almost 300. And it's the result of partly of us having a broader reach across the country, but partly also that so many women and gender diverse folks went, oh, I can actually make my own hours, work from home, and be in control of my career, be in a more safe feeling space if I go and start my own company instead of working for a larger corporate that at the end of the day is giving millions to the top level man in charge and maybe paying me what I'm worth. So we're getting more people wanting to train up and be ready to just run their own businesses. And that's been a real big increase. It's a great thing. It's a really great thing for, you know, for artists and for industry, but it's definitely a major change in our ecosystem.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's really interesting. Frederick, we have another mic here. So as somebody who works directly with artists, you know, both with your label and, is it working?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, it is. With your label, but also management, you know, you're having to advise some of the people that Paco and Robin are talking about. And it's like, no, can we afford to tour? And you're saying, yeah, but I got it. You've got to go and meet your fans. You've got to build these fans. You've got to go out and start your career. How do you advise them? What?
I mean, that's a tough advice to give. I mean, I can give them insights on how the financial looks so they are aware of what they're doing at least. Mm. And you are taking this risk. You want to do it, of course. And so I've been seeing, especially in the business management where I handle a lot of touring bands, and also in the other, you know, record labels that we support. I mean, the struggling that we're doing with cost, as you've been talking about, Robin, especially after the pandemic, we weren't aware, you know, that came as a surprise. And they have already booked everything and all the plans were made, and they had to go out and do it because they need to catch up on losses they had during the pandemic. So that's been a tough ride, and many bands have been put in that position to decide can we afford to go, and can we afford to keep spending money on our dream, pretty much, which it also is. A little bit what you were into, the road going to finding a sustainable level where you actually can support yourself on your business, that threshold always pushed a little bit up. It takes longer for you to get there. And it keeps getting longer and longer. Maybe not that long still. I still think it's a vibrant and a good, you know, business also in the independent, you know, level. And we see exactly the same thing as you do in Canada with the bigger promoters. They want to promote bigger shows, and they do more of those. And the consumers has, you know, a limited amount of money to spend, so they have to choose. I think in the next few years we will see which one of them will survive, because I don't think we can have that many big stadium shows, especially if regression keeps on. So getting back to what you're saying, what kind of advice do I give them? I mean, the ones I manage, it's a different advice. I need to think of their personal situation, a lot of other things, but the business advice is just putting out the numbers there so they can see how it looks.
So I mean, it seems to me that, say, pre-COVID, you know, in many ways, the music business in across the whole industry in all the different aspects, it was growing and growing, and so many more people were creating different aspects of it. So, you know, more boutique festivals or a slightly bigger festival or certain kind of show, certain kind of artists being able to create their own ecosystem directly with their fans and build their own little worlds, which were very successful. And that seemed like that should be the way of things. Did it grow so much that it became inevitably unviable? Because, you know, you can't. People started to think, "Oh, this is my career. This is my life. This is what I'll do." Whereas, you know, say even yesterday, or in one of the panels, we were talking about how was it that different in the 90s or the 80s? Struggling musicians were still struggling musicians then, whether they were streaming involved or not. You know, it's still very hard to actually make it. You know, there's a very big difference between, you know, an emerging artist and Taylor Swift. You know, it's a gulf. It's gigantic. Although she was an emerging artist, obviously, at one point, but. Do we have an unrealistic idea of this music industry? You know, are there not really as many jobs in it? Is there not room for as many people to think of themselves as artists and base their life and career on that?
I think the definition of realistic career, like, is different for different artists. And I say this all the time. I work with a lot of artists, but I don't know how many people relate to this, but when my family members are like, "Oh, have you met like Taylor Swift?" I'm like, "No, but I met these other artists that are never going to be a family name, but I'm so proud and excited for," right? Like,
yeah.
There are tons of Canadian musicians who make great careers that you'll never hear of, because it's either they're writing for other people, or they're making most of their money in sync, or they're traveling and doing like viable tours across Europe every year or something like that. But I think it's about figuring out what success is for you. And I think it's defined differently for different artists. I mean, I'm not going to lie, there are a lot of artists who put all of their effort and money into a career that may not take off for them. And it's the nature of industries like this. It's similar in acting, right? It is a very tough career, but it's also about defining what success is for you and being realistic about that, because there are a lot of opportunities in music creation that and industry that aren't going to be household names, and that might not even be your goal. Not everybody's going to be a Pink or a Taylor Swift or whatever. Like, they're just not. And you know, being realistic with yourself is important, and I think that defining that and figuring out what's realistic for you is important.
I agree with Robin. It's important to mention that success, the idea of a successful career in the music industry, is set by the industry, not by the artist. So it's really important for us to understand that. Sometimes an artist can grow horizontally and have more, and we talked about this yesterday, I believe we're talking about this, and it's very important to understand that the independent artist and the independent mind works differently than the actual industry, and that's why it's called independent. So I think what the pandemic did, it's actually also really broke down many barriers that we actually had before, because we were growing. I mean, 2019 was probably our best year of all. But at the same time, it was a very unsustainable way of seeing the music industry. It's the same bubble that we're going through right now. And it's probably gonna explode in a couple of years, because everybody's in debt and everybody's trying to make up for the losses in the pandemic. But that's what the music industry tells you. That's what the music industry is all about. It's like you're supposed to have this success. You have to be, you're charted. You're here. You get you're top 5, top 20, top 40, right? So, and that's only set by the music industry. But if you as an independent artist, as a creator, as an artist, you see yourself in a different position, I think it's a better opportunity for everybody. And I keep telling all the artists that I know, you can actually, there's no more need for that particular part of the industry. It's an option. Managers like us, I also manage artists. Record labels, promoters, we're only a tool within the artistic set of way of things. So I think it's that particular part, what happened, the pandemic, also broke down some walls because, for you to be able to build new ideas, you have to, break down old ideas. And it also happens with equality, for example. We have to break down all ideas of what equality and equity is so we can actually come to a better understanding of that. So when it comes to creation and when it comes to an actual artistic way of seeing things, I think it's probably the best moment for the artists to be independent, they have a lot more resources than they had 5 years ago. You can actually go through a different type of services yourself. And I think our responsibility as a festival, as a promoters, managers, is putting all the right tools in front of the artist. And one of the responsibilities that we have as a festival is not only be a festival to showcase artists and to see it as a business. I think it's really important for us to also understand the responsibility of being an actual platform. So some of the stuff that we do when we exchange and when we come to conferences and we meet artists and we meet managers and we meet expert music offices, all we talk about is sustainability, how we can actually make it sustainable for the artists. Because, the entry label is probably the hardest one, but it's the one that has the most tools. The mid label is probably the hardest one of all. Because then you don't have financial aid or any resources what an entry level artist is, but you don't have the success of an actual headliner. So if we talk about the struggle is right in the middle. So for those newcomers, there are many tools, and the problem is that the industry is not built to show the tools. Either you're successful or you're not. So you're gonna pick up naturally. You're a label, you're gonna invest on an artist that's already making money. Now you're not gonna invest on an artist that is not really making money unless you have a different way of things, a different way of seeing things. So just to wrap up that idea, I think us as a cultural and an artistic folks within the industry, our responsibility, I think it also lays into what we can do and what we can make, how we can make the ecosystem sustainable.
A lot of the artists that I work with on the business management, they are, mid-level touring bands. Sorry, what was the question again?
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was.
But at the same time, there's so much to talk about, and there's
so many interesting things to kind of pick up. And I was like, where were we?
And it's also entangled. It seems to me that it's so tangled up. So say you're a new artist. What do you prioritize? Do you prioritize trying to write a song? Do you prioritize trying to get on stage and learn how to communicate with an audience? Do you prioritize your social media presence? Which is more important?
You have to do everything of that.
Yeah, and it's almost as if, it's funny because people talk about the 360 deal or whatever, but in effect, the artist has to be the 360 multi-hatted person who's managing their social media account, they're managing their finances, the tour logistics, they're managing booking shows for themselves, sorting out, do I need a physical product? Do I need to press up vinyl? Do I need a cassette? All these questions.
You need to know who your audience is.
Yes, exactly. It's true. And you've got to find that audience and build that audience. But it seems as if, in many ways, You know, I think the music industry has been fueled by romance since, especially once the media helped build up the story and the picture. Suddenly, you know, everybody's investing in this dream of superstardom that seems quite reachable, but actually is not. And then, you know, it's all broken down by punk, and it's kind of reinvented, and that whole DIY spirit takes over. But to a certain extent, underneath it all is still the dream of being the superstar. And the reality is very far from that.
But that's the fuel in the beginning and during the career, maybe. But I mean, it's getting harder and harder to keep on to that the longer you go, and if the success doesn't come. But I mean, what I was thinking of, you know, with our mid-level sized bands, the one that's sustained and the one that can survive longer time are the ones that manage to keep their rights closer to themselves. You know, if you control and own more of your rights, it's of course easier to sustain in the longer run. You may be giving your, you know, signing a record label or a publishing deal to get ahead financially or to get a chance on the big thing, but if it doesn't happen, you've sold a big chunk of your future for that chance. So the clients that I have that are making a healthy living of it, they often have a lot of it close to themselves, so they can control it. They get the bigger portion of it. They have good people around them that help them in specific things, but have been able to not sell off as many times. You know, maybe And in Sweden, I think it's a healthy market. You know, it's easy to start a band. You have a lot of help from the community, and it's easy to come out to the small clubs. It's a nice and vibrant scene, and it's also quite easy to kind of climb the ladder nationally and then go abroad still. But it's how long you are able to keep on hanging on to that dream, and how long you can you know, live without being able to pay your rent and go be on the road the whole time, and how long you have the energy to do that, until you get it up to a level where you can survive on it. But it's not impossible in Sweden. It's not even impossible for a band singing in Swedish, only having Sweden as a market. And I'm also surprised on how many people that are in Sweden actually making a good living out of the music industry in all aspects. As you said, you know, people or bands or artists or writers you haven't heard about, you know, making a big chunk of money, but where it's coming from is changing all the time. Mm-hmm. Now it's, you know, in Sweden, the biggest labels are the ones making sheet music for Spotify. They are grossing the most, you know, bigger than the major labels on master revenue. And that wasn't how it was when I started. Then the biggest revenues came from other places. And now when touring is hit, that affects the touring artists a lot, because that has been a big chunk of their, you know, main income.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was a really expanding part of the whole thing. You know, it's tricky because there's not enough time to solve the music industry's problems. But do you think we've got the lay of the land? It sounds a little bit, you know, it's a bit worrying, the future and how the state of play, but there are some positives as well.
It's a bumpy ride still, I think, would say. Yeah.
The two things I've heard in the last few years that I thought were really, may not sound it, but really uplifting is Canada's a hockey country, so hopefully this doesn't fall flat, but it is more possible, more feasible to have a successful career in music than in hockey. Okay? So, you know, parents, support your kids' music careers. I thought that was really interesting because you can make so much of those decisions on what it looks like yourself, whereas you can't in other things. And the other thing is that it's not having another job that's like outside of your music is not failure. And I think a lot of people see it that way. And if you have a love and a passion for your music, but you also have another job that you really enjoy, especially if you can find one that's flexible, that they work together, that's not failure to say that you have another job. It's just part of what makes you. And I think a lot of artists have a hard time seeing through that and seeing as like, I want to make it so that I can quit my other job. But that doesn't need to, I mean, maybe for you that's the goal, but it doesn't need to be. And I think that a lot of the time that focus and feeling of that it makes it hard to get past that visual of being successful or not.
Yeah.
I think it has. I think the music overall has a very bright future, and it has to do, I think, mainly because we built in communities. The music is creating its own community, and the artists are building their own communities as well. And we see it all the time. We're very community-based. We engage with the community in a sense that, you know, it's a festival that only has been around for 7 years, but it already has a community that is truly passionate for what we do, and we exchange that dialogue. So I think that, you know, the future is in creativity and community, and really what we can do as an engagement and we can and the dialogues that we can actually have. So I feel very very positive about the future, whether it's Intel and it's pretty much based on what the music industry is telling that the music industry should be, or it's our opportunity for us to create a new way of within the music industry, which is, I think, artists, promoters, labels, managers, institutions. I think our responsibility is creating that path, and be part of that path is also very important for the future of music. I've seen before. I've seen it in Mexico, for example. Like there's a very vibrant new scene that is within the industry, but it's also outside the industry because it was created by itself. It's a very independent way of thinking. So there are these really good, very new bands that they learn how to do it all by themselves, and that's really important. So us giving a space to all these bands is also really important. So now now these kids that they released their first album on 2018, 2019, now they're on their path to be probably signed by a booking agent in the U.S. And that's okay, that's fine, as long as they continue creating music and they have their own creativity way of thinking. Now, what you were saying is really important when you lay down sort of like the rules of engagement, right? And they say this is the industry, and this is where financially looks a career. This is how a tour looks like. This is how a record looks like financially. I think that's you know, managers, that's an important role, and just to put it in front of the independent artists. But the mind of the independent artist always gonna create a balance within the industry, and that's what we really root for, just giving that space for the independent way of thinking.
Well, that's all we have time for. It's been brilliant hearing your different perspectives. Thank you so much. I'd love a round of applause, please, for Paco and Robin and Frederick. Brilliant stuff.